Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can write to me at my email address, at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Before I introduce my special co-hostess for tonight, I do want to mention that our healing weekend is only a couple of months away. It's going to be right outside of Washington, D.C. It's going to be a wonderful weekend, a healing weekend for some women who have been there already and returning, for some people who are just starting out on their journey. We're going to have therapists who are there to help you through that journey and give you good strategies on making it a stronger healing process for you, and just reunite and just being with women who understand exactly what you're talking about, who don't think that you're crazy, who realize the hardships that you're going through, no matter what stage of recovery, if it's a stage of discovery, recovery, going through all of this, having input of some wonderful women just like you, will totally help you on this journey of recovery. So if you're interested, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com, B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. There is no charge for this, you know, your travel expenses. We have a really beautiful hotel that's very reasonable, and we just ask you for $75 to pay for the meals. And that's it. The rest is my gift to you. You know, I incur the expenses, outside expenses, because I know that women really need to heal from the situation. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome my special co-hostess for tonight, my friend Deborah Sutton. Deborah, welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Hi, Bonnie. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you back, Deborah. You haven't been gone very long, but it always seems like a long time till you get back here. But I'm glad you're back now.
Thank you.
First, I want to be the first to wish you an early happy Valentine's Day, because I know that this week coming up is a tough week for our women who are really always going through a lot of hardship. I mean, it's bitter and it's sweet. It's bitter because it's Valentine's Day and all our dreams of love with our husband seem to be down the drain, but it's sweet in the sense that at the end of a long period of holidays that are centered right there around women, you know, and their husbands or family holidays starting from Thanksgiving till now, where I think that women are really, really in a sad state from everything they have to go through enduring family holidays with different kind of family or broken family, whether you're in your family or out of your family, it's really a hard day to celebrate. Do you find the same thing?
Well, my ex-husband wasn't big on holidays or Valentine's Day or any special occasion for that matter, so I don't really miss him. Now I've involved myself with, like, my grandchildren's Valentine's party at school. And I'm enjoying that.
So. One of the things, you know, I try to write a little something each year about Valentine's Day, but this is an article I wrote from back in 2011, and I think it's still very relevant today, so I'm just going to read it. You know, it says, each year the issue of my newsletter comes out on the heels of Valentine's Day, the ultimate annual reminder of how hard you can keep trying to make crumbs into a cake that never seems to stick together. It's impossible to escape the reminders that loom largely in your face, or in the case of all of those heart balloons, over your head. You can turn off the television and the radio to avoid Hallmark commercials, but as soon as you walk into the market, the first two rows of display tables are filled with hearts of chocolate and bouquets of roses. To many of our women, this is a painful holiday. For those still in a marriage, your husband sometimes does his husbandly Valentine duty of bringing home a card with little X's and O's or expressing his appreciation of you by giving you a box of candy, even though he keeps telling you how unappealing you are to him because of your weight. On this sacred day, he lets that comment pass as he shoves the chocolates at you, encouraging you to enjoy them as a way of saying, don't expect more. Yep, some sweets for the sweet. It doesn't mean that he's going to make love to you or make you feel beautiful, but hey, crumbs are still crumbs. By the way, on a personal note, how many crumbs does it take to make a cake? How about a slice of cake? I haven't figured out that one yet. For those women whose marriages have ended this year, your first Valentine's Day is usually the worst, which is the good news. In the future, you'll feel better once your emotions sort out from the reality from the fiction in your marriage. At least those moments of frustrations of wondering why your husband couldn't love you the way you needed to be loved on that special day of romance or couples will be better understood. The other bonus is that you won't have to feel frustrated and once again disappointed after making the day such a special one, only to end up with this recurring headache, toothache, backache, or inability to perform due to, oh yes, stress. One of the ways that I'll keep trying to hit home to our ladies is to make Valentine's Day a new tradition of loving you. Unless you can learn to love yourself, trust me, it will be impossible to love someone else, at least in a healthy way. I know that may sound funny, but trust me, it's true. When I was younger, I had a distorted image of what marriage was about. I believed if you love someone with all your heart and soul, you would live happily ever after and ever. Amen. I guess that I meant was that I had to work hard every day, waking up and figuring out what I could do to have my husband keep loving me the way I loved him. Sadly, many of us from the baby boomer generation were socialized that way, not realizing that marriage needed to be a two-way street. Do whatever it takes to make your man happy. Those were the messages we kept hearing over and over again. We found ourselves in marriages that weren't fulfilling because no matter how hard we worked, we were running in circles. It was sort of like running around that Valentine heart. You'd move up the curve on one side, but within a short amount of time, you'd become sliding down on the other side. Then you try climbing up that slope again, only to be bounced back down. In other words, even if you get to the top, don't plan to stay there very long. And the climb down, or rather the fall, is a long and slippery one for sure. And yes, we got tired, oh so tired of the excuses leading to the accusations. Valentine's Day is for young people. Valentine's Day is for young lovers. Valentine's Day is for newlyweds, which all translate into one real meaning of what your gay husband is thinking. Why are you always trying to think of a reason to have sex? Here's the funny thing. As much as you are dreading Valentine's Day, so is your gay husband. Remember that song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover by Paul Simon? You know the one that says, get off the bus, Gus. Make a new plan, Stan. No need to be coy, Roy. Yep, for your gay husband, it's 50 ways to say no to your wife. It could include lyrics like this. I've got a new pain, Jane. I have too much stress, Bess. You're much too large, Marge. I need some air, clear. My tooth does hurt, Gert. There's a pain in my head, Peg. Yep, I bet I could rewrite that song in a flash. Sadly, so could all of you. So to my weary women warriors fighting that hopeless battle, gather your strength for the fight ahead to learning to love yourself most of all. You see, I've learned in life and through enough hard knocks and lessons that when you love yourself first, you'll never be disappointed. Why? Because you won't depend on others to love you in a way that can be disappointing and defeating. Even when you are disappointed, if you love yourself enough to analyze the situation and do something meaningful for you, you don't personalize the rejection, you realize you are not the problem, your partner is. Remember, if you don't learn to love yourself, you'll be doomed to repeat your legacy over and over again. It may not be with a gay man, but it will be with some man who isn't worthy of your time or attention. Don't forget, there are lots of unsavory predators out there in the straight world. Some of you have told me all about them. Well, actually, I found my own collection of them for a number of years as well. Happy Valentine's Day to my ladies, and better days are ahead, I promise. So what do you think of that, Deb?
Well, I think that's true, and like you were saying, you might find yourself in another relationship, maybe not with a gay man, but, you know, that it's not treating you so well. I've been married twice, and, you know, my first husband was the same way. I mean, he never bought me Valentine's cards or showed me any appreciation or anything like that. So, and he was a straight man. So, I was lonelier, I think, in relationships with men that didn't appreciate me. You know, lonelier with them than I am by myself.
And I think that's something we all have to learn, because I think a lot of women stay in relationships because they're so afraid to be alone. But I always say you can be in a relationship and be much more alone than if you're with yourself. Because to me, nothing is more lonely being with someone who doesn't want to be with you and who makes you feel that everything you're doing is wrong, who questions your motivations when you want to be, you know, have someone hold you, kiss you, someone to be intimate with you, who rejects you continually. I mean, is that any way to live? Is that what all we're worth? What do you think, Deb?
Oh, it's not the way to live.
And I think also it's just you owe yourself more. And I have this little book that I love, and I've had the author on several times with me. It's called Women's Success Guide, and it's written by a woman, Carmen Nina Pulido. And she wrote this book, you know, I guess this number of years ago. And I just love this book because it gives you so many tips on how to survive as a woman, and it gives you exercises you can do to build yourself up. But I just want to read a couple of things here and get your opinions on this. And it says, the self-love, self-esteem, and success connection. Self-love, self-esteem, and successful living are intertwined. Self-esteem is self-love and vice versa. You can't have high self-esteem without high self-love. And the way you get and keep high self-love is to support and stand up for yourself. always, no matter what the circumstance or challenge. When you give up on yourself or allow circumstances or other people to dictate how you should feel about yourself, you've already lost. Conversely, when you love and support yourself no matter what, you've already won because you've put yourself in the right position to get or accomplish what you want to get or accomplish. Therefore, if you want to be a winner and have a successful life that the Creator intended for you to have, and that is what you want and deserve, you must love yourself properly, enough, and always. Let me give another compelling reason why you must start with self-love. If you don't, whether you realize it or not, you're really sabotaging yourself and setting yourself up for to fail, because you're approaching life from the position of weakness, not strength. When you make others' needs and wants more important than your own, and you're not willing to show up for yourself when you need to, you're not going to get the best of what life has to offer. You're going to get the leftovers, what somebody is willing to give you, what they think you deserve, or even less, what nobody else really wants. Winners and successful people never settle for someone else for what they think. They should have to get it and know what they want, and then they go after it no matter what. They said, here's another reason why self-love is the foundation of your success plan. No other human being will ever know you like you know you. Nobody else wants or needs exactly what you want or need and when you want or need it. Nobody else knows what it feels like to be you or all of the circumstances that led you to being who you are. So basically she's starting to say that self-love, you know, if you can't love yourself, then you can't expect others to feel good about you. Do you agree with that? Because you work a lot with, you know, talking about narcissism.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of your writing about narcissism, and maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, I totally agree with that. And I've been listening to Ross Rosenberg, and I believe you had him on your show once.
Mm-hmm, I did.
He rewrote a book called The Human Magnet Syndrome, and I haven't read the book yet, but he's a psychotherapist, I believe, and he calls it a self-love deficit disorder. And he was he's codependent in relationships, and he said 30 years experience in this work, and I've been reading and listening to a lot of his videos, and this is his message to, he had had relationships in the past, you know, that weren't good. He said he picked the wrong ones. You know, he had a bad picker. That's what he said. He was a bad picker. But he talks about this. But I think when we don't love ourselves, we do pick the wrong people to marry and to have the relationships with, because they're meeting us at our own level of care that we give ourselves.
Well, that's really true too, Deb. One of the things that Carmen talks about in her book, Women's Success Guide, it says that some of the reasons why people don't love themselves, for instance, part of this, and we've talked about this in our support group a lot, is parental influence. Another reason why it's hard to love properly is because we're not born with that ability. The ability to love others and ourselves properly is an art that's learned. It's not something that just comes naturally. Most parents naturally love their children, but don't necessarily know how to love themselves or their children properly.
Right.
Parents are flawed human beings, just like everyone else, who have reproduced another human being, and human beings who reproduce other human beings don't automatically and mysteriously lose their faults and flaws and become terrific, mature, responsible parents who know how to love themselves and love others properly. Instead, what usually happens is parents the way they were parented, whether they had a good role model or not. Therefore, for faulty ideas and behaviors get passed on from one generation to another, and children internalize bad, unloving stuff as normal, or as what it is to be expected, or what they deserve. Then when these children become parents, unless they're enlightened, they repeat and pass this on these faulty thoughts and behaviors to their children, and the cycle grinds on. That's how we let children, that's how we let the negative experiences we've had in our lives influence our ability to feel good about ourselves and others, and inhibit our ability to make smart, self-affirming choices that result in successful, fulfilling lives. Negative parental role models and patterns are hard to overcome because it's difficult to admit negative things about your parents. And it's even more difficult to change negative patterns, but it can be done. First, you have to recognize the negative model or pattern, then you have to consciously work to replace it. And I know a lot of that is true because a lot of what we do is learn behavior. And I was having this conversation this morning with a young woman, you know, and, you know, a new member of our group. But I told her one of the reasons why, you know, it's very unhealthy to stay together in an unhealthy family unit is because children follow what they learn. If they're in a home that's an unhealthy situation where they don't see that parental love expressed, you know, towards mother and father, and with a gay and straight person, it's very rare that you're going to find that kind of parental love, and certainly not the intimacy that they see, you know, on television all the time. They know something's not right. But then they know that in their own lives, as they move on, they get the mixed message of, maybe I'm just supposed to take whatever happens to me, or, well, my mother wasn't happy, but she stuck with it. So we're leaving that legacy. A lot of times, you know, abuse is repeated. When it comes to physical abuse, that children who come from households where there's physical abuse often end up in relationships where there's physical abuse, because that's your learned behavior, and that's why
and the
cycle
the pattern
is broken, right?
We just keep repeating the patterns that we grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to fix it. We think we're going to finally fix this pattern. But it doesn't get fixed. The only person we can fix.
Well, beyond that,
ourselves.
I think we think we're going to fix these men that, you know, cannot be fixed. You know,
yeah.
Many of us who were in marriages, especially long-term marriages or long-term after marriages, always thinking of things are going to change, that we could fix our husbands, you know, it just never happens because we keep feeling that if we keep trying and running around in circles enough, that these marriages are going to change. But they're not going to change because this is not a matter of a couple who have a different opinion on something. This is a gay man in a straight marriage where he can never love a woman the way he can, you know, relate to a man. I mean, it's just not natural. And I'm not saying they don't love their wives to the best of their ability, but the ability is not what a woman needs. They need a man who can love them as a woman, not as a friend, not as a sister, not as an aunt. But I think that by staying in these marriages, you're really giving bad imagery to your children. And I think also that when you're in a marriage that's destructive, children blame themselves. They really do feel they're the cause of the problems in the marriage. And then they're always trying to fix it. And they're always walking around on eggshells. And they have anxiety and they, you know, they're nervous because they hear their parents fighting. So, I mean, it just is all around disastrous. And that's why no matter who you're with, it doesn't have to be a gay. Yeah, go ahead.
When I was growing up, you know, women stayed in these bad relationships. They stayed for their family, the children. I don't believe in staying for the children. I think it does them more harm. You know, it does them more harm staying.
I know that I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. I had a father who was really mentally not right. But of course, I didn't know that as a child because I loved him so much. So I just thought everything he did was wonderful and great and funny. But the point is that he wasn't. He was really mentally not right. And so the thing is that I didn't know from a normal, that was my normalcy. And I do believe that, you know, my parents split up when I was older. I was, you know, 17 years old, but my sisters were much younger. They were only babies. You know, they were much younger than me. And even though my mother had a really struggle, they grew up more well-adjusted because they didn't have that disruption. Do you agree?
I agree. Yes, my father when he was in the service, he was discharged from the Air Force, dishonorable discharge, and they said he had antisocial personality disorder. And he was a very cruel and abusive man, and the abuse he put all of his kids through was horrible. But he was so emotionally flat, he really didn't have any feelings for any feelings or empathy for anyone, not even his own children.
Well, that's the kind of father I had, one who was the same way, but, you know, always playing mind games and fighting, you know, with my mother with mind games. And I grew up in that environment, and I didn't feel very secure at any given point. And so I feel that my sisters grew up much more well-adjusted, even though financially they had a lot less. They were able mentally to be in a much better place than going through the constant fighting and arguing. That's why I say many of my own relationships in my earlier years were based on my, you know, distorted thought patterns of what a relationship should be like, because I never saw a healthy home pattern. And I think that's what women need to know, that if you're living in a pattern of dysfunction or running around in circles and going nowhere, lacking intimacy, lacking affection, you know, that marriage is more than just a friendship. Yes, you need a good friendship to keep a marriage good, but if you needed just a friendship, you could marry your cousin or your brother, be friends with them. Right?
Yes.
That's not quite, you know, the kind of relationship that you want. And you don't want to model that for your children. You want them to find the love and the affection, and you want them to get the best out of life, not the worst. So, with narcissism, going back to that, since you know so much about it, Deb, I always say you're my narcissistic expert, narcissism expert. You really study it a lot.
I do.
And you write about it. Lot, and you write really beautiful things about it in your blogs and in your books.
Thank you.
And,
when I came, you know, the end of my marriage was just the tip of the iceberg for me. Looking back into my, you know, family, and my father being diagnosed with that when he was in the service before I was born. I remember my mother telling me that. I don't think she knew what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't understand that. She, you know, when we said somebody was narcissistic, we thought they were just conceited, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain to people what narcissism is, Deb?
Well, narcissists are they're wounded people. Actually, they grew up, in many of them, not all, but I'm talking about the ones that grew up in abuse and neglect, clinical narcissism. They're very wounded, and they have a problem regulating their emotions, but they didn't deem themselves worthy in childhood, and they killed off their real self, and they formed this false self. The real self is gone. So this false, wounded self has to be propped up at all times for them to know that they exist. And they feed off of people's feelings and emotions. And, you know, this props up their false self.
And I think that a lot of times we don't recognize this, because they can also be very charming when they first meet you. You know, I say they're always looking for a source of feeding. And they're looking to feed on people's admiration of them, of trying to impress people about how wonderful they are. And many of us who have husbands who are narcissists, we can never understand how other people think they're so wonderful when, you know, we're living with them and we know they're anything but that. But they're able to act very well, right?
Right, yeah. They can put on an act for the public when they're totally different and abusive at home.
and they are. But yet people don't seem that way. And they can really charm anybody, including us. And then they know how to play us. And
well,
then if
go,
we don't agree with
go,
them, they say they attack us, right?
Yeah, they go back and forth. In getting this supply from you, they will go back and forth between nice and mean, and it's a cycle, a vicious cycle. You know, they'll throw you some crumbs so you stay in the abusive relationship, and then they get mean again, and, you know, it goes around in a circle. But they do that because when they first got with you, they were high on this new supply, and you start, you know, growing old to them and feeling stale, and they need to have contrast in this fuel, so they'll devalue you, and then they'll get nice again, and they go back and forth. It's all to create the fuel supply that they need.
Right, and what they do is they build you up to knock you down.
Right.
And, you know, in other words, they'll charm you, they'll tell you they're sorry, how much they love you. And you, who at this point feel so unloved anyway, because no matter what you're doing, it's never right. No matter what you ask for, it's never good enough. No matter how good you are at something, they're still critical of it. So then, after they knock you down enough times, and then they say, honey, I'm really sorry. You know, I didn't feel good that day, or you really have good points. And then you get off guard all over again, waiting for more of those compliments. But as they lift you up, they're knocking you down for something else.
Yes.
It's not like it's a one-time thing. It's a continual motion of building you up, knocking you down. Building you up, knocking you down.
Yes.
Because if they keep building you up, you may start asking for something. If they keep knocking you down, you're never going to be asking for anything because you're going to be afraid of the rejection. Right?
Right. I think narcissists really get all the love they need from themselves. They just need us to reflect them back to them because we're a mirror or the pond that they're looking into to see themselves. That's all we are, because they need to see that their false self exists. I think they
need to be
get
validated.
All the love they need from themselves. We just have to mirror this back to them. We're the mirror.
Well, I think it's like in that movie, Little House of Horrors, where you have to keep feeding that plant. You know, and he's going, feed me. And, you know, you're doing everything you can to keep it fed so that it'll keep quiet. And it's kind of like the same thing. You know, as long as you're feeding them, making them feel good. And actually, I am so good with narcissists because having known so many over the years that I know how to play them. They think they're playing me. I'm playing them. I will build them up. I'll make them feel better than anything. They'll love me because I'm there watering them with all the compliments that they're looking for. I make them feel good in that way. You know, I don't have to sit and argue with them. I mean, I know what they are. So, you know, that's why I say with narcissists, there is a no-win situation. You're never going to win. You may temporarily hold your own, but you can't win. Because I believe a narcissist can never truly love you. Do you feel the same way?
I feel the same way. I think they, when they're infatuated, they think they're in love. Or when they don't want to lose the fuel you provide for them, they think they're in love. But what their idea of love is, very abusive. And it's not real love. I mean, they aren't
real.
They don't even have a real self. It's gone. They just have a fake persona left.
I'll tell you, I know from experience that when you really love someone, you feel good about waking up in the morning. You don't have to think about how am I going to dodge today. Running from side to side, running across the field and back, being afraid to walk on eggshells. You don't have to wake up with anxiety. You can wake up with peace in your heart and love in your heart because you're going to spend another day with somebody that you love. And that's what it should be. love should be something that you look forward to, nothing that makes you cry continually. That is not love. If someone has to treat you that way and you have to go to bed at night crying, then there is something definitely wrong. And it really hurts me to see women living under these circumstances, all because of so many different reasons. But, you know, first you have to accept the situation.
I'm sorry, Bonnie, to interrupt you, but did it take you some time to learn this, you know, what real love is?
And oh, yeah. It took me years and years and years and years. I just, you know, wasn't even ready to talk about it for the first 11 years when my marriage ended. That's because my children were little. I was going to school, so I wouldn't have to, you know, I would be able to provide something for them. You know, that's when I was going to school and trying to build my life up. But I had been very beaten down. I was a very strong woman prior to my marriage. You know, I had the world on a string, but it only took one person to take that string and drag me down the gutter. And I'm not blaming him that he purposely did it. I mean, I believe he loved me to the best of his ability. But it wasn't the kind of love that women need. You know, I often said that my ex-husband used to shout me down to shut me up. Mm-hmm. You know, if I disagreed with him, he would shout me down. Well, every time I tried to speak the truth, I'd be shouted down, so I just learned how to shut up and not say anything. So I was very wounded for a long, you know, a short amount of time, just a number of, you know, 4 to 5 years. But then in the recovery process, you know, to build myself up, I wasn't looking for anybody. My heart was closed. Mm-hmm. I was trying to just put my life on an even keel, take care of my children, be a good parent, you know, do well in school, get a career, and I was very happy just being around friends. So 11 years later, when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, my heart opened up, and I said, I want to meet someone. But it took me many years and many mistakes. You know, you had to learn from experience. When you come out of these marriages, your next relationship, a lot of women jump much too fast because they're afraid of being alone or because they haven't had any kind of physical or emotional intimacy for so many years that they're willing to just grab anybody who they think will give it to them, and it's usually a bad mistake. You know, they haven't even spent the time recovering themselves and learning what went wrong in that marriage and how they allowed it to go wrong and why they stayed in it for so long. So those have to be issues you have to deal with, and that's why I'm very strongly in favor of good therapy after these marriages, if you have that opportunity. We have some wonderful therapists who are part of this network who really understand women who are going through it. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we have a wonderful male counselor coming on here who really works with families, and he'll give his insight into how destructive family situations can affect the children. But we have other women who are part of our network. All you have to do is just write to me, and I'll send you a, you know, referral. These women do counseling through phone, through Skype, and these men. You don't have to be in their office, so you can get the right help you need. But also even coaching. Like, for instance, we have Suzette Vernon. She's part of our network of coaching. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even Pamela, who does, you know, physical coaching. Whether it be means building yourself up physically, emotionally, coaching sometimes is more important than therapy, depending where you are on your journey. But getting the right help to get on the right track is essential if you're planning to have a happy future. Because usually, Deborah, women who are in these situations had baggage before they got into them. There weren't that many really well-adjusted women who went into marriages with gay husbands. And I'm not saying that they even knew, had any inkling they were gay. Mm-hmm. But a lot of our women, the truth be known, they came from dysfunctional families where there was alcoholism, where there was drug abuse, where there was mental health, mental issues with their parents, narcissism, sociopathy, you know, antisocial behavior. So they've been growing up in dysfunction. And then when they meet someone who can be kinder to them, you know, they're not asking enough of the right questions. They're just happy to have somebody come on, you know, horse on, you know, knight on a white horse to grab them and to take them away from whatever misery they knew. So
well,
they're not learning how to, right?
That's how I ended up with my second husband. You know, I mean, I came from a dysfunctional family growing up, and then I was married to an abusive man and left that marriage and married my second husband just really fast after, you know, my first marriage ended. I didn't even take time to heal or think about anything. I just moved on, you know, just real fast.
Well, I think because we were younger, Deb. I mean, when we were younger, we didn't know a lot of things that we know now. A lot of times I tell women, stop kicking yourself in the butt and blaming yourself. I mean, it's all part of growing up and maturing. Mm-hmm. We don't know these things when we're in our 20s. You know, these are life lessons that we're learning the hard way through the school of hard knocks. But the only advice I can give is that when you're finished with a negative relationship, before you jump into another one, you have to get better insight into what good relationships are about and what you're allowed to have, what your boundaries need to be. And especially if you've been in an abusive relationship, something less abusive looks good, even if it's still abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to walk into the ideal relationship. You'll just walk into something that seems better than the last one. And
the
then you'll find yourself in the same place.
The boundaries are very essential part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I didn't have
And
any
let me tell
before.
You why so hard. Exactly. And you want to know why it's so hard to build up boundaries? It's because when you live with rejection, whether it be parental rejection or first marriage or relationship rejection, that you don't know how to set up boundaries because you're so afraid that somebody that you might care about won't want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep thinking, I'm worthless, I'm not loved, I can't do anything right. So if I say, no, you can't do this, I'm going to lose him. So you don't put up boundaries because you're so afraid that you finally found somebody who you love, whether they're good for you or not. If you put up a boundary, then that person's going to say, nah, well, never mind, it's not worth it to me. And you're going to lose them. So once again, you're afraid to set up boundaries. And I think this just comes with time and experience. I don't think many women are strong enough to start off with boundaries, you know, because they don't feel that good about relationships, especially if they come from homes where there's dysfunction. You know, your parents have a lot to do with how you feel about yourself. And I always said that, you know, I've met some of the most beautiful women, you know, physically beautiful, who've won contests for their beauty, who have far less self-esteem than I have. And I think to myself, wow, look at what she looks like. How could she, you know, feel so bad about herself or have such little confidence? And, of course, now I know, you know, when I was younger I used to wonder that. But if you're not given those messages when you're younger, and you grow up without that kind of parental support, loving you and nurturing you and making you feel good about yourself, then guess what? You're not going to feel that good about yourself no matter what you look like.
Right.
You're going to look in the mirror and you're not going to see what you look like. You're going to see what your parents are telling you you are. And that to me is so sad to rob that from someone. But unfortunately it happens all the time, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of issues here that we have to deal with. The important thing is to find support for them and
well,
then
Bonnie,
keep working on them. Don't run away from them.
Bonnie, how's your book your new book coming along?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me about that, Deb. You know, I mentioned to people that I'm writing a new book, and I haven't had, you know, I've been just so busy with my life in general that I'm just now piecing it together, because it's going to kind of be like a lot of action happening around this book. I told people on the show a number of times now that my ex-husband, who died back in October, did a wonderful thing for me, and he gave me the best gift, and he always used to buy me gifts throughout the years, whether we were getting along well, not getting along well. He was always, you know, first to give me a gift for my birthday, for a holiday. But before he died, he gave me the very best gift of my life. And that's why I call it, you know, the gift of truth. That's what my book is about. Because I think a lot of people who are part of our network are aware of the fact that over the last few years, there's been some people who have been very much trying to harass me and detract from the work that I'm doing and trying basically to shut me down through consistent harassment, setting up websites against me, sending letters to my host of, you know, people coming on the show not to do it because I'm a fake and I'm a fraud and a phony. You know, sending out all kinds of terrible comments on Amazon, on other publications, anywhere they see my name, putting up fake videos on YouTube, you know, all kinds of things that are so destructive to me. And it took me a long time to get a handle on it, because even though I had some of the information, I didn't have the key component to why or who was actually leading it and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So before my ex-husband died, you know, a short time before, you know, he had to be honest with me and say to me that he had been involved with several people who were on this trail of destruction to make my life miserable. These happened to be, you know, specifically a couple of gay men who actually live out in California who were kind of leading this campaign against me, although there are others involved too. All of that will come out. And the best thing he ever did was give me that gift of truth, and he gave me a lot of his emails that came from these people and, you know, all the things they wrote. And it's just amazing how many, you know, I have pages and pages and pages and pages of how they were just sitting looking to destroy my life. You know, so, you know, like I'll read you just a couple lines, you know, that they had written, so they'll just know that I really do have everything. And the great thing is, Deb, I'm kind of coordinating the book to come out at the same time that, you know, I started pressing charges,
mm-hmm.
federal charges with federal government, because what they're doing is very, very dangerous, you know, as far as bringing charges of cyberbullying.
Well, I guess that's why they're too afraid to show their face or say who they really are, because they're hiding.
Exactly. Exactly.
This is what online stalking people do. They're cowards, and they won't let you know who they are. They attack, you know,
mm-hmm. they
behind
do,
the scenes, and you don't know who they are.
And, you know, my ex-husband was kind enough to give me all their emails, you know, from a number of people, but this one particular one who was his main contact, like, for instance, just an excerpt so they'll know. That I'm not kidding. I would categorize it as a caution more than fear with Bonnie. It's a matter of having become aware of her past or current activities and having seen what she does and what she's capable of. Whenever I'm asked to conduct a threat or risk assessment, I begin with a case history from a psychologist, a medical doctor, and whatever information is available. As it often happens, there's no case history from which to work here, and no way of doing a thorough first-person assessment with Bonnie. In these situations, the only option is to assemble a narrative with as many facts as can be found. I'm not typically able to gather as much knowledge about the subject or their circumstances as I have with Bonnie because of their numerous books and blogs. So a narrative below would be considered rich with the kinds of information I typically need for an assessment. You say you view her as a bully who will use information against you. I believe she is something more than a bully. A bully typically acts out towards people they already know, who they perceive to be weaker than themselves, and use their strength, position of power, or information power to control others. Bonnie undoubtedly bullies people in that way, but she goes beyond that behavior of a bully. She's lied to journalists, media, personalities, vulnerable women and gay men, thousands of people, but she doesn't puff herself up only to sell books. She goes well beyond exaggeration and embellishment and claims to be the counseling expert, specialist, and leading authority in a field in which she's never actually been a practicing professional. She claims to have worked with over 100,000 women, which is impossible on its face, not to mention she doesn't have the capacity, skills, or license required by law to do it. Under this manufactured and fake guise of expert counseling, she leads women to believe and repeat and act out of irrational, irresponsible, and even dangerous notions that cause harm. So that's just a little tiny excerpt of all the pages of information that my ex-husband was able to turn over to me, including all their names, which I really needed those names, and now I have them. So just like, you know, this person had no qualms about sending all kinds of letters out under an anonymous email to people to try to knock me down. You know what I always say in our group, Deborah? Karma is really a bitch. So,
well,
I'm planning to have my own. And that's what's going to happen when the book comes out and the feds do what they're supposed to do, because they're working with me now, even though they think it's a bluff. That's why I wanted to read a little excerpt from my upcoming book. and mention that there's a number of people who listen to this show to try to find more criticism with me who are going to be very surprised when everything happens. So thank you for asking me how the book is coming along. It's really coming along very well. The more information I have.
I've seen some of the nasty remarks these people make. I mean, they'll use your children's death against you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
do.
They just use anything.
They do.
Yeah. Just anything.
They use everything they can to try to, you know, cyberbully me and, like this gentleman says, to bring me down to my knees. So it's not going to work. I'm not the one who goes down on my knees. However, I'm sure this guy who's writing this stuff does go down on his knees, but for a different reason. Right? That's what it is when you have gay men who just want to sit and bully you for no reason whatsoever because they don't even know me, nor have they ever met me, nor have it affected their lives. They're just teaming up with some others who are just looking to stop straight wives from finding out the truth. But the truth is that I'm never going to stop talking about the truth, and no matter how they try to destroy me, it won't matter because it's not going to happen. My allegiance goes out to straight wives, and it also goes out to gay husbands who are struggling in this situation who want to do the right thing. I have several thousand men who I've worked with, about 2,200 over the last 30 years. I have letters and documents thanking me and praising me for helping their lives improve. I have so many letters from women saying I showed them the light. So they think they can stop me from doing the right thing because they want to do the wrong thing and make women stay in these marriages, not expose their husbands, keep quiet, shut down, and have no quality of life. That's not happening. And like I say, they can accuse me of whatever they want. The truth is the bottom line.
And they really
even
hate
if I don't have a counseling, even if, and it's so like one of them has a degree from the same college I went to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the one who wrote the letter; it's his partner. Has a degree
well, they
from
hate
the same
the
college I went to.
Well, the divorce movement. They hate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you would think they would have something better to do with their lives than sit and harass me, but that's okay. You're right. I do have a lot of allies, and I do have a lot of people helping me. And they're not going to destroy me, and they can think whatever they want. I'm not mentally ill, so they accuse me all over of having mental illness, and that will really go good for my harassment case, too. So I strongly suggest that who's ever doing this, be aware that I know who you are, and if you want to continue to do it, it's just making your life worse. But that's okay. You can keep trying. So thanks
well,
for asking
I think
me, Deb,
it takes somebody not right or mentally ill to do this to someone they don't even know.
Exactly. Someone who's had no contact with them.
Right.
These guys weren't even married. They were just gay men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so they were not even married. They don't even have any grievances against me because, you know, they think I split up their marriage. They were never with women. They were not ever straight men, straight pretenders.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just gay men having their fun and thinking that they're just going to shut me down, but they're not. And that's okay. Like I say, bigger and better have tried and it hasn't happened, but I do appreciate the fact that at least my gay husband, ex-husband, before he died, was kind enough to let me have all their emails. And this is going back for a few years, you know, with different kind of emails, different kind of harassment. And he felt so guilty because he saw that in the end, when push came to shove, I was the only person he could really count on for all the help that he needed.
Yeah.
And that whatever our past experiences were when I knew he was sick, I put them aside and I took care of him till the end. You know, I was talking to him every day, a number of times a day, and he did feel very bad. And he said to me, please forgive me. I will do anything. I will tell you the truth. But please, you know, please forgive me for what I've done to you. And I did. I did forgive him because he did give me that gift of truth.
Oh,
so I think that could make a good, I think I could make a good mini movie, maybe. I know that these guys always talk about, you know, how I'm exploiting people by writing books that I get at least $1.75 for on each one. But this is why I have a full-time job and I don't take money for any of the counseling that I'm doing. But once again, you know, like I say, I could make a really good movie out of this, hopefully, with the outcome and watch them as they're going away and waving goodbye. And then I'll have the last laugh for sure. Don't you think so, Deb?
I think so. And,
yeah, and you know, they've done nothing to stop harassing you either, because anybody who's associated with me, and you were very closely associated, so they've certainly had their fun with you too, right?
Oh, they do, and I don't understand one thing. I've looked at their blog, and even if they're not writing about me, they tag my name in I don't know how many different ways and attach it to that blog post of theirs, even if I'm not the one they're writing about. Debbie Sutton, Deborah Sutton, Deborah Oma Sutton. They tag my name in all these different... I don't know if it's because I have a blog and they're hoping to get readers that are searching for my blog. I don't know why they tag me in every
one of their...
Well, that
would be good. It would be good if they would start reading your blog, because you have wonderful things on your blog, right?
Thank you.
And that's what I say. I love the business they're giving me. It's wonderful. And someday, once again, you and I will be having that last laugh together, won't we?
Yes, we will.
So our final Valentine's message for all your women is to not let anybody knock you down, just like they're trying to knock us down. Love yourself enough to stand up and say, I love myself, and I'm going to make sure that I find the happiness I deserve. And anybody who's trying to take it away from me is going to be trying for nothing, because I'm strong enough to know what I deserve, and I deserve more than what I have. That would be my Valentine's message. How about yours, Deb?
Yes, I want to say happy Valentine's Day to all the women. And just love yourself. And boundaries are very important. I think that's one of the most important things you can have, are personal boundaries. So many of us need that.
We really do. And it's really important to make sure that love is a positive thing and not a negative thing. And if you can love yourself, you really don't need to have other people love you. That's one thing that I learned over those 11 years that I was, you know, in a state of limbo as far as any relationship. I wasn't looking for one. I wasn't interested in one, because I loved myself enough at that point. I felt happy enough that I didn't need somebody to make me happy. I was good on my own, and there's a number of women who are part of our support network who are very happy now. They're not looking for men in their lives. They're just happy to be here and living a fulfilling life, with whether it's friends, whether it's family, whether it's work. You know, you don't have to have a man to make you. But in many cases, you can have a man who breaks you, and that's 10 times worse than being on your own. Wouldn't you say so?
Oh, yes. I've found contentment being on my own. I haven't dated or looked for another relationship, and this is where I've started loving myself and caring about myself and my needs for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's...
I feel really
good
about that.
Look how much you've accomplished. Yeah, Deborah's accomplished so much in a short amount of time. She has out 2 books, Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behaviors, and Signs of a Gay Husband, Volume 2, On the Other Side of Fear. Deborah also has a wonderful blog online. If you'd like to see her books, you can go to Amazon and go to Deborah Sutton, as you'll be seeing on this broadcast what her name is. And, you know, do yourself a favor and learn how to look for these signs so that you don't get sucked into them again. So, Deborah, this hour really went fast. Thank you so much for being with me tonight.
Oh, thank you for
having
me.
I look forward to having you. Well, I'll have you back soon in a few weeks, so worry not. You're stuck with me. All right, to all our listeners, happy Valentine's Day. We love our ladies. We love our honest gay men. And try to make this a happy day for you. And good night.
Good night. Good night, Bonnie.
Love you, Deb.
Love you, too.
Love. Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.